Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You'd be off.
Have we gone? We're not interested at all. Just leave.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we're back in the rugby dungeon, here to talk about Six Nations on this podcast. There'll be a domestic podcast in your feed as well. You've already heard just a little snippet of how excited JB is for this one.
Can't wait.
We have to be tactical, don't we, Phil?
We've got to keep him interested.
Yeah, so we do the domestic one second, because then he comes alive, then the energy. It's like he gets his second wind.
Been a lot of interesting results this weekend, I can tell you.
They really have.
Hey, but this is international weekend, right?
Yes, it is.
All
it is.
Internationals. So, let's start with the bigger story. Congratulations, Spain.
Congratulations. Oh, yeah, Spain. Because Russia are not Spain, aren't they?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Commiseration.
Not Russia.
And for any newcomers to the pod, I just want to explain that briefly, how we came to refer to Spain as not Spain. Russia as not Spain.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the moral story is you can't keep a good team down. So, in my opinion, they had qualified in their own right.
2018?
In 2018.
For the 2019 World Cup.
Yeah, so they should have been, that should have been their first World Cup.
Yes, because they qualified in the 2018 European Rugby Nations Cup Challenge Championship thing. The autumn after that, we saw the repechage, the conclusion of the repechage in Marseille, but that was the tournament before then, so 2018, where we were in Madrid to watch Spain hammer Germany.
Yeah,
to them.
And we thought that was the week before. So that was like the final home game before Spain were going to seal their World Cup spot for 2019.
They just had to roll over Belgium.
Even even the King of Spain turned up to that game.
Again, apparently, this weekend.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. Very good.
Well, yeah, so that was...
Ashley Giles.
So Spain had a big turnout for their final home game in that year. And then they just had to go and beat Belgium and a Russian referee.
No, a Romanian referee. Vlad Ionuchik. Remember the name.
And then the administrators in rugby, it was all up in arms. Yeah, it was a huge controversy.
What actually happened is it was obvious that this ref had destroyed the game, but you can't really prove that. There's no email chain, there's no backhanders. There's a couple of rumours I've heard about the Romanian team celebrating it with Vlad in some of the bars that we frequented. I even got sent a bloody picture of a business card that he left at one of the bars. So,
because we went to Bucharest the year before.
Exactly.
And we thoroughly enjoyed the hospitality of the Romania rugby. So
yes, but Romania were not blameless in all this, would be my suggestion. But they couldn't prove it. So they went down a different route, which was player ineligibility.
They turned over every leaf they possibly could find in every direction.
Yeah.
And this was the technicality
because
they got them on.
They didn't want Romania to go to the World Cup.
Yes.
So Russia was sort of blameless in this. They were just the fortunate benefactors.
Let me be clear. JB's talking. Russia were blameless in this.
In 2018
rugby World Cup 2019.
Exactly. They were blameless. They were just the guys that were the beneficiaries of the fact that Georgia had already qualified.
Yeah.
Spain would have qualified if they weren't cheated by a Romanian referee.
Yeah.
They couldn't have Romania go in, and therefore they tried something else.
the only one left.
It all came from, I think, the Cook Islands had some ineligibility problems. That's where it all came from. So the precedent was set, and then Spain got hammered because they were using guys who were not qualified but were French and playing like in Pro de Deux and lower down.
I think they had some potential, like Kiwis or Saffers, who'd not had the full residential qualification period.
And Romania had some Salcianders. Yes.
Yeah. Spain didn't go to the World Cup. We felt it was a travesty. We were invested in that particular campaign for Spain because we were there in Madrid with over 200 Egg Chasers listeners. And if you were there, you'll know what a great weekend it was. And we've had so many emails this weekend from people that were in Madrid.
Yeah.
Matt Clifford being one, he's emailed contactegchasers@gmail.com saying he's a big fan of Los Leones. And he'll be at second place Spain versus third place Portugal in Madrid at the weekend, with Georgia already having qualified after the expulsion of Russia. He just wanted to point out what a massive game it was. Spain won and have qualified for the Rugby World Cup 2023, their first World Cup in about 20 years.
Maybe the first World Cup, actually.
No, I think they've qualified once before.
Portugal have.
Yeah, Portugal qualified at least a couple of times.
I think Spain have qualified once before.
I'm not sure.
No, maybe.
I don't remember Spain being in one in my... Since 2003, I don't remember them being in one.
I think you might well be correct.
Yeah, so just a few more things on Spain. One of the reasons that we went to Spain-Germany is because we took an interest in Tier 2, but Spain have very slowly, very gradually, step by step, been doing all the right things you need as an emerging nation to get to where they need to be. And what I love about this is last time when they qualified, rightly so in my mind, it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't like the one-off golden generation. They've been putting the foundations in for decades now. So it's so good to see them actually come back from what, you know, I don't know if I could lift myself up from that. If I was an amateur player and I was that close to the World Cup or in Pro Dider or wherever they get their players from, and you get literally inches away, not literally inches away, because that's ridiculous. That's not a thing. But metaphorically, inches away.
Literally inches away from the shores of Japan in 2019.
They're told to go away. Back.
Taken away from me. I'm not sure I could wait.
They were ankle
voyage.
Deep in the Japanese waters.
They were wading to shore.
Japan last, they appeared in the tournament in 1999.
There we go.
Japan, Spain did.
Spain did, yes. Spain did, sorry, yes.
Okay.
And you've just reminded me of something. We have been contacted on an email with another literally, and it's Mike Tyndall at it again. Have a listen.
Mike Tyndall.
Thank you, Dan Collins, for letting us know about this.
TV from other podcast. We enjoy that.
What? Is he on? I thought he was just an England player. If you go
through it, Bai is carrying exceptionally well. Marchand is... Fantastic. Yeah, literally a machine.
Wow.
That's not on. That's not allowed.
No, it's not allowed. Yeah, literally to jail.
Ridiculous. So well done, Spain.
Congratulations, Spain.
I'm just disappointed we can't see Portugal next weekend. Because Portugal obviously pushed Spain very close this weekend.
Yeah, you two are going to be in Lisbon.
They got a draw against Georgia at the start of the tournament.
Yeah, not bad.
And Spain travelled to Tbilisi this weekend to win the whole thing if they beat Georgia,
yeah.
Which will be tough going, but maybe not impossible.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Awesome stuff.
Yes.
As for the Six Nations, just briefly, a bit of housekeeping. So obviously, contactegchasers@gmail.com. We'll pepper the emails through the pod. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts and hit subscribe. That's one way you can thank us if you appreciate the podcast being there for you 52 weeks of the year, every single Monday morning, 9 seasons and counting. Over 600 episodes and counting, and thank you for your support, which you can also give us at patreon.com/eggchasers.
Yes, do that. It'd be great.
I quite like a Friday night Six Nations game, and I quite like the Six Nations being done Saturday tea time as well.
Yeah, I do, actually.
I don't mind that. That allows us to focus on Premiership on the Sunday, which is always good.
Yeah.
I do have an issue. I've said this before on the pod. I have an issue with the 4:45 kickoff unless I'm going to the game. Just because it's with young children, it's a very awkward time. But it allows me to do what I like even more, which is turn my phone off about 4 p.m, record the game, and then watch it in total comfort with no distractions at all at about 8 o'clock with a nice can of IPA.
I did exactly the same, Phil.
I love doing that.
For very different reasons. Nothing to do with small kids. And it's depressing, the actual reason. But I found myself at 5 p.m, in IKEA.
Oh, on a Saturday?
Just...
Why? Oh.
Well, we've just had some building work done. The
spent all that money on a wonderful house and you go to IKEA?
Well, the wardrobes... This sounds ridiculous. The wardrobes in the dressing room.
Dressing room. Hang on. The dressing room in your bedroom or in the West Wing?
The dressing room in our bedroom, which is now the penthouse suite in the loft. Anyway... the builders managed to negotiate me down. They said, "Look, can you just buy the carcasses from IKEA and we'll fit them in so they look like fitted wardrobes? But honestly, it'll save you money and it'll just it's so much less." So anyway, I had to get some IKEA drawers and then build them. Anyway, I watched it about 8 o'clock at night. Same as
yes,
you. with a beer. You're right,
with a beer and no phone. No phone. Totally switched off. So no distraction.
Yep.
Not worrying about what people are moaning about on Twitter, which I imagine it blew up 82 seconds into the game. I didn't see any of that. Yeah. Absolutely delighted not to see any of that.
Do you want to start there or start on Friday night? Or how do you want to play it?
Don't mind, really. Let's go with Friday night.
Friday night, obviously, France are on for the Grand Slam.
Yeah, France may be a generationally great team. Certainly a French generationally great team. They're wonderful to watch. They are packed full of superstars. There's everything to love about this team, both their story, their physicality, their flair, and yet not many people in Wales could be bothered coming to see them.
Well, yeah, what happened here? There was apparently some 10,000 seats.
Yeah, as of Friday afternoon, you could still buy 30 tickets next to each other on the WRU website, which is only limited because that's the maximum amount that you can buy.
Is this because it was a Friday night and difficult for some people in Wales to get to after work? Or
some
pricing structure of it? What was?
Well, apparently it was more expensive. Apparently the Friday night, no one wants to show up, which we know, by the way, is not true because we've seen Friday night games which are fine.
I suppose France, it's hard for French people to travel.
Yes, it is.
Which they normally would do.
Yes, that's a fair point.
But it's also a great game. And you've got an opportunity of watching some amazing rugby. I'm amazed it didn't sell out. But there again, if you constantly berate your fan base as being drunken oafs who vomit on children, and you take away their beer, and you weaken it, and you shut the bars at half time, what do you expect? Why would I want to give you that money? And then you combine that with higher ticket prices, which inevitably will happen if you can't sell beer, which I imagine is a quite nice little moneymaker at the main stadium. It's just stupid.
£5 or £6 a pint.
Yeah.
You'll be rolling in cash.
I know a few lads that went down this weekend, and you can't possibly back this up because the people you'd want to question are too hammered. But the instances of people coming to the stadium more drunk than normal is actually quite high now because people like to have drinks before the stadium, knowing that they can't get a beer inside the stadium.
They're like 16-year-olds going down to the park with their ready-mixed bottle preloaded.
Right. Exactly.
Or students preloading before you go out to the club.
It's like putting a curfew in late at night. We had curfews various points during lockdown. Everyone has got an end in sight, so everyone will drink faster to hit that end.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we were in Bath and everyone kicks out at 10 o'clock, it was like a race.
It was absolute carnage.
I've honestly not seen anything like that since, before the licensing laws were reformed and everyone kicked out at exactly the same time. That's how it was.
I remember boozing down in London at that time where there was a 10 o'clock curfew, and the underground at 10:05 or 10:20 insane.
It was.
Because everyone has got drunker than they possibly can, then they're all on the street at the same time, and
how
everyone's in the tube.
How do you all die on the underground? I don't get that.
there's a few incidents.
Yeah, one or two.
Not that many considering
them. So anecdotally, as you understand it, people were just turned up having preloaded.
Well, I mean, if someone just told me that I can't trust you to go to the bar, so I'm going to shut it, I don't want to give them my money. I'm drinking. People seem to think that we, and this relates to the red card as well, which we'll talk about later, but people seem to think rugby is here for some higher purpose, that we play it for some reason or we watch it for some reason other than just enjoyment. And we don't. It's just enjoyment. And if
it could be UFC, it could be an opera, it could be whatever. It's
and
rugby.
I want to get drink at those too. I mean, I don't want to drive to the opera. I don't want to drive back from the opera.
Yeah, I'm not going to the opera unless I'm nice and drunk.
Yes,
By the way, that was one of Martin Lewis's money-saving expert tips.
Get smashed at the opera.
Get smashed before you go out to the rugby. That's what he said.
Oh, really? He's probably right.
Before the opera.
He said tenant super.
I wonder. Well. the argument goes something like this, right? If you're only there to get drunk at the rugby, don't come, you're not a real fan. I would like to make the opposite argument, which is, if your goal as a journalist in Wales Online is to write about not getting drunk at the rugby, you're not the real fan. In fact, I don't think you've ever played rugby. How can you ever play rugby and not know how integral getting drunk is at the game? I just don't The only reason you go there is to get drunk.
If you want to...
And vomit on children. But I tell you what, that is ridiculously hard. I've tried to vomit on many child, and they're just so fast.
If you do want to watch every single play in detail from multiple camera angles, you're best not go into the game.
Yeah.
The more you watch less rugby at the game than you do in a clubhouse.
What you do get to soak up, which I've experienced at it was then the Millennium Stadium, and I can imagine at Twickenham, 60 minutes into the game on Saturday evening, it would have been just bouncing. And that's why you're there.
Do you know what? One of these things you need to remember, right, is that if you are the kind of guy who likes to tweet multiple things into a thread about how the game went, that's really cool, because we need people like that who really pay attention to the game. That's how innovation happens. That's how people think about the game. And those people who really enjoy the game or take it seriously or write about it or whatnot, if they want to watch it from the press area, or if they want to watch it from home and get all the details and the replays, like Phil says, stay at home and do it. It's not, you go to that game because on that Friday night or that Saturday night, people who don't usually watch rugby are full of national passion. They're proud to be there. They want to get drunk. It's an occasion. It's a cultural thing. It's not just for you to ruin it so you can write down the various plays and be all pious about it later on.
I think there's an element where it's that unspoken thing. Much like you're not allowed to say, or some people will look down on you if you say, I love it when you see a massive smash of a hit in rugby, which I do. I love it when you see Courtney Laws fold up Jules Pleason in half. And,
anyone.
A player could come to serious injury in that. I love it. It's one of the reasons I played rugby. It's one of the reasons I watch rugby. It's one of the reasons I love rugby. The bravery, the courage, the physical challenge of it. But it's almost like you're... I'm out of order for saying that, but that's the truth. Much as going to a rugby, going to Twickenham on a Saturday evening, there are a load of people there that are there with their mates, and it's part of a whole day, a whole night,
it's
making
cultural.
Memories, and it's, like you say, cultural, and it's the whole experience. The match, the pubs.
The getting lost.
Yeah, exactly.
Not finding a way home.
Exactly.
It's all, and I've done all those things.
Yeah, massive walk back to whatever city you're in, except for Cardiff.
Yeah, getting in the taxi to Newport to travel in to realise that you're staying in Cardiff, travel in. Everything that can go wrong should go wrong, and that it all involves drinking and watching rugby.
Yeah, and it's all wonderful.
Talking of things going wrong, I don't think it did, actually. I quite like how Wales handled themselves.
Wales are... So, they struggled in the first game against Ireland, and perhaps that just shows how good Ireland can be when they're on song. Besides that, they are such a horrible team to try and break down.
Yeah.
They work so hard. Their defence is really good. They've got a couple of excellent, excellent kickers, particularly from deep, in Dan Bigger and Liam Williams, who I think they really got the better of France in the kicking duels that happened this weekend. And that led to Wales restricting France in the way that they did.
And just to dovetail briefly, because we will talk about it in more depth, obviously, but England got the better of Ireland in that sense as well. They did better. It was a strength relative.
It was. We'll talk about some of England's strengths and weaknesses in a bit. But yeah, Wales, I thought, when I saw the teams, I actually... text a WhatsApp group of ours and said France by 100.
Yeah,
because minimum. You look on paper, you just think this France team is going to absolutely destroy that Welsh team, and they couldn't.
No.
They only broke them down from that one try. It was a Liam Williams loose kick with Jaminet and Villiers and Jolonche, and they finished that beautifully. Besides that, they had a real tough time of it.
Yeah,
and it was Wales were unlucky not to get more out of the game. I mean, with 10-12 minutes left, when Jonathan Davies drops that pass inside from Faletau, he collects that and scores, Wales could have won this game. It was there for them.
Yeah. And now, there were a few things, tactical things, I think Wales did really well. For the first time in a long time, Cameron Wockie was not dominant in the lineout, which I can't believe people haven't worked this out before. It always goes to him because he's amazing. Yeah, but, simple isn't easy. Wales seem to have solved that, and I wonder if part of that was having the third line-out jumper in Seb Davis bolted on at six. Mm. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, and again, there was a lot of chat from people bemused at the selection of Seb Davis.
I can see that. I mean, there's so many good back rows in Wales.
I can 100% see it, but I think that alone, what you've just identified, the line-out is such an important launch pad for France. Wales disrupted it. France found life difficult. Wayne Pivac, vindication in selection. And
yes.
And those people that were very, very noisy, and there was some in particular I heard that were really vociferously saying, what on earth are you doing, Wayne Pivac?
I don't know if you've heard, Tim Basham is like the best player on the planet now after the Ireland game. Didn't play this week. But Wales, and the reason I mentioned Tim Basham is because Wales have got so many good players.
Yeah, they do.
Like, Faletau's come back, and he might be the best player on the planet now.
Faletau, what did he play? About 80 minutes across two or three games for Bath.
Yeah.
And then just looks world class. I mean, that tackle he made hunting down, was it Jaminet?
I think it was, yeah.
That was just incredible.
Yeah.
Bath,
the athleticism
must
of the guy.
Scratching the head like, who is this guy? How do we sign him? Yeah. Where's he going to go?
How much does he want?
Yeah.
Open checkbook.
So, I mean, maybe a discussion for another time what the point is in him going back to Wales. But just a marvellous, another marvellous, marvellous game. And what I like about him so much is how he runs into contact. And he can get smashed because he's not enormous. He's not like Billy V.
He's not 130 kilos.
No. And he will then get up and do it again and again and again. His work rate is almost as impressive as his talent. He's nearly as good as Stephen Jones has been saying for however many years. Nearly that good.
And he's so good in the outside channel as well because of his, as you mentioned, Tim, his athleticism. He's such a talented player.
Yeah.
Do you know a guy that I love?
Go on.
It won't surprise you why I love him. No, that I do love him. Maybe the reason that I love him might surprise you. Josh Navidi. I love Josh Navidi.
Yeah.
I love Josh Navidi because he's physical. He'd be an amazing grappler, you can just tell. But do you know why else I like him? Because I think about how many caps he should have and what he's done with his career. And do you know when you watch the Welsh regions and you go, they are terrible. There's not a single player that I like there. There's not one that I recognise. They're all kids. Well, Josh Navidi was doing all the hard work for Cardiff for years and years and years and years while Sam Warburton was wrapped up in cotton wool and only playing for Wales. Like, that's what he was doing. He was nose to the grindstone every week, and now finally he's got some test caps.
He was Sam Warburton's fluffer.
Yeah, basically.
But, they're very similar ages, 2 years apart.
It's incredible. And, you know, he is the reason that the Welsh system is so broken, because he does not have 60 caps, but he's given more service to Welsh rugby than most ever will. And he can't go over to make more money in the Premiership or France, because he's done what everyone should do, shut up and play really, really hard. So, he's a great example of why I just hate the 60 cap rule. Lads like him should be able to go overseas now and earn a fortune.
Can I tell you something I really enjoyed?
Yes.
I'm gonna play this. It was the BBC commentary team. It was Eddie Butler with Jonathan Davis on one side of him and Joe Worsley on the other.
Yeah. That's cool.
What I quite enjoyed about it, this clip is a great example of it, I'll play you in a sec, is Jiffy and Joe Worsley. It sounded like someone had just put two microphones in front of two random fans in the stadium. Eddie Butler is just kind of doing his commentary thing, and Jiffy and Joe Worsley are just kind of paying no attention to him and just saying the first thing that comes into their head. Have a listen. There we go. Come on.
Who said, thanks a lot? It's gone very loose. Who this suits
danger time
remains
now
to be seen.
Watch out.
Dupont. Good, strong handoff.
It's Banzo, isn't it?
Wales are really narrow here.
Antonio, the little dink, it's being picked off.
Chance,
brilliant take by Seb Davis. Aldrete, a little bit of crunch and grind, just
the contest.
Restore.
There we go, that's the clip. And that final bit of commentary from Eddie Butler made me think of something else which I've prepared. Have a listen to this, Jay. What's that? What's that noise?
It's your phone, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Oh, okay, fine.
I'm holding the phone, playing.
That final bit of commentary from Eddie Jones reminded me of something.
My mind's telling me no.
Yeah, crunch and grind. No, you can't play him!
But my body's telling me it hurts.
We're going to get in a lot of trouble for you playing him.
A little bit of crunch and grind.
Nice.
Yeah, we're going to get demonetized for that one.
No, no more money for us.
Yeah, sorry about that. One more.
You got to see him in person, didn't you?
I did.
A little bit of crunch and grind.
Oh, I'll say that now. I'll recount. Go on.
Anyway, I quite enjoyed that dynamic of just Jiffy shouting, Joe Worsley doing the same. It was good.
Yeah.
But Joe Worsley did that. He made lots and lots of very perceptive points. Not in conversational format, just shouting
just
out.
Shout them out.
Well,
he's a good coach.
He's a professional coach, isn't he?
Yeah.
So I really like when BT Sport do this fairly frequently. And not so much BBC. In fact, never the BBC, to be fair. But BT Sport will get Glenn Delaney on, who is so perceptive.
He's great.
And he can tell you things like which are really cutting edge because he's a great thinker. Mm. And I'm pretty sure Joe Worsley is cut from a similar sort of cloth, which is he studies the game. So he might just be shouting out wide or look at the space. But there probably is space there and it's probably worth listening to.
Yes.
I'm not saying Jiffy's not, but he's not.
Well, you had Joe Worsley being the perceptive, like making really perceptive. Oh, Wales and Arrow here. Brilliant. Let me look for that. And Jiffy going, numbers!
Yeah.
They're basically making the same point in slightly different ways.
Jiffy's probably no longer the student of the game that he once was.
No.
He just watches Wales times a year.
I know Clive Woodward gets an unfair rap.
Sometimes it's fair.
Sometimes it's fair.
Didn't he call Charlie Yules that guy? Which is completely fair, by the way, because most England most England fans until that red card would have said that.
Clive Woodward gets more stick from me about the fact he hasn't updated his suit collection in about 15 years.
Oh, we need to talk about suits later. We're getting well off track here. Wales, another thing. One of the few teams that kept Gregory Aldred very quiet.
Mm.
He was apparently poorly in the build-up to the game,
right?
Which might explain that.
Yes. Yeah, maybe.
He was under the weather. However, he took to the field, so he obviously was well enough to play, and on that basis, you're absolutely right.
Well, they kept a lot of guys quiet, because that back line, Dupont didn't stand out, Unterbach didn't stand out, Villiers did have a good game, Dante and Fiku were fairly quiet, Mofana was quiet, Jaminet was quiet.
Well, you got no line-out ball. Well, you got less line-out ball. One of your top ball carriers isn't getting over the game line. Wales' top ball carrier is getting over the game line. It evens things out pretty rapidly.
Yeah.
It was brave, wasn't it? Heroic.
A heroic defeat from Wales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that said, France winning when they're not...
When they didn't play well.
Great.
So, Wales now go to Ireland, right? And if they put up a cricket score against Ireland... Sorry,
Italy.
Italy, right? Will they go ahead of England if England lose?
When England lose, then Wales, it will be points difference. And I think after the England-Ireland score, it'll be pretty similar, won't it? Because it was Wales-Ireland was a similar gap.
So Wales are currently 4 points behind England.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're going to be ahead of England.
And they have... Wales currently are 40. Is that right?
Yeah.
44... points difference, points behind
44.
So the most likely place for England to finish is fourth, but could be fifth, depending.
You might say it's more likely that they'll be fifth than fourth.
Wales will put 30 points on Italy.
Yeah, and if England lose by 15.
Yeah. So that would be 2 fifth-place finishes on the bounce for England.
That's tough. It's tricky to explain away, isn't it?
It is very tough. Very, very tough. And
I wouldn't like to be explaining that away. Would you like to try and explain that away?
No.
Tim? That just look back on that opening day and think if England played as well as they did against Ireland, against Scotland, they win that. They were
England,
poor.
Yeah, England were very poor in that first game.
Yeah.
But
funny enough, so, go on.
Yesterday is interesting, that England performance, because there's a lot, I've seen Genji and Jamie George and others saying it's kind of like a proud in defeat. And I think, so there are positives to take out of that game. There are also some big negatives. And I'm not talking about the Charlie Yules incident, although for Charlie Yules, that's his third head-on-head red card.
Yeah.
That is just unacceptable. I mean, James Ryan is 6'7". and he was upright, to hit him in the head, a guy who's 6'7" and upright in the head, there is something wrong with your tackle technique if that happens.
Can I make a small mitigating argument for Charlie Eales?
It's not yes, much please.
One, but I'm going to try.
Go on.
Not to do with the tackle technique, you are right on that. A lot of chat pre-game was about Ireland not facing South Africa of all teams since 2019.
Didn't they beat them last year?
Don't know, but let's just go with it. But this, Eddie Jones is saying they've not had a physical game for a long time. They've not played South Africa for a certain amount of time. Yada yada yada. I'm sure 2019 came up. Could be wrong, but I'll blame Eddie.
Blame Eddie.
And he's saying we're going to have a really, really physical afternoon. I don't doubt that. But within the space of the first 20 minutes, you lose one of the most physical men in rugby, Tom Curry. One of your props has a concussion. Is that Sinks? Sinclair went off with a concussion?
Sinclair went off with a concussion.
And your second row has had a head-to-head. And I wonder if... And I am not the sort of guy that says, I don't want physical rugby. I love physical rugby. But maybe there's just a point of diminishing returns where, you know, are you really going to out-physical another international team?
Are you
by
trying
that
to
margin?
Lay Tom Curry's injury, Carl Sinclair's head knock, and Charlie Eales to one side? Are you trying to lay those at Eddie Jones's door?
No, not really. I'm just saying that because I agree with Eddie. I agree with Eddie 100% that if you come and beat teams up physically, like I've seen England do in the past, you win games. And if you get it right and everything clicks on that day, fine. But then I also think, what are the chances of you being able to physically dominate absolutely everyone? And if that was his game plan, maybe take your foot off the pedal a little bit and try something slightly more nuanced. Because I do think coming out all guns blazing can lead to adverse consequences, like Charlie Eales, like Carl Sinclair, like the injury to Tom Curry.
That sounds like you're putting Tom Curry and Carl Sinclair at Eddie Jones's door.
Well, I'm not really... I'm just saying... Yeah, you know, if the number one goal is physicality, there is a price to pay for that.
I mean, Tom Curry, he pulled his hamstring, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah, he was chasing a kick and he pulled the back of his leg.
Yeah,
And Sinker was just a head clash, wasn't there?
Well,
but Charlie Eales, it's poor tackle technique from Eales. Ireland didn't play South Africa last year, so.
So it is 2019. What was it?
It will be.
Yeah,
because South Africa hadn't played since the World Cup in 2021.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, for the Lions tour.
Yeah, I think Eddie Jones approached Ireland exactly the same way that I would approach Ireland, which is they don't play physical rugby. They haven't played much for a long time. And he was wrong, like I'd have been wrong.
Well, interestingly, England did get the upper hand in one area.
They played France piece. Earlier in the Six Nations anyway. So.
Oh, no, Eddie actually addressed that. He said, we're different to France.
Oh, no, I know that, but in terms of Ireland... The suggestion that Ireland haven't
Chris
faced
Jones
the physical team when they're...
Chris Jones asked him, he said, well, what France? Because we're very different to France.
Yeah.
they won't have seen a team like us. That's actually, it's a great interview.
Eddie, I always take things that Eddie says with a pinch of salt. I mean, did you hear his barista anecdote in the midweek press conference?
No. It sounds like Jamie George and Elliot Daly probably gave him this story.
It could have been. He might have, because he said, I went in for a coffee, mate. And the barista says... Reese says that Ireland team and terrible accent.
Mate,
straight have a beer,
mate.
He's very whiny, isn't he?
He's very whiny. But he said the barista when he went in for this coffee says the Ireland team's the best Ireland team. You've got no chance. They're massive favourites. All the Ireland ex-pros say that Ireland are going to win. All the England ex-pros say that England are going to win. So how are you going to play the game? I'm like, Eddie, that never happened. You just made up a conversation with a barista.
I know there's lots of places where it wouldn't happen in Liverpool, happen in Manchester. It might happen in Gloucester.
It might happen in Auckland.
Auckland, it might happen?
Or Christchurch. It might happen in Cape Town.
Do you reckon... I don't think the...
Handful of places on the planet that would happen.
I don't think that the New Zealand rugby public... Oh, New Zealand, International Women's Day, we'll have to get to that later. I do not think the New Zealand rugby public is nearly broad enough thinking to consider Ireland versus England. They're completely self-absorbed with their own stuff.
I'm not sure. I think
he went for coffee and Bath inside the stadium.
Yeah, so he may or may not have embellished or fabricated a story
entirely fabricated
to make the point that Ireland are the
are you saying
the
that,
big favourites for
are
the
game. Are you saying that Eddie Jones is rugby's Jesse Smollett?
Juicy Smollier.
Smollier.
Have you seen French, the Dave Chappelle bit?
Very, very French actor.
Yeah, if you don't know who Jesse Smollett is, then look at the news. And if you haven't seen the Dave Chappelle bit on Juicy Smollier, then it's brilliant.
Yeah,
yeah, that's an amazing bit. I guess my point is, I take almost everything that Eddie says in a press conference with a massive pinch
take
of
Take him
salt.
Seriously, not literally, is maybe the best way to do it.
So, England, they did get an upper hand physically, on certainly in one plane of the game, the scrum.
Yeah.
And
I was amazed.
Massively so.
Tig Furlong got pumped.
Yeah. It's because, so he has got no game tape of Jack Noel scrummaging.
Yeah.
And Jack Noel behind Ellis Gens.
Exactly.
Is just...
And Eddie called that years ago.
He did, to be fair.
He called Jack Noel could be a flanker years back.
And that was... So, I said before there are some positives and negatives about England. Some of the positives, I think some of the players were immense. I thought Marrow
again.
He almost didn't play because he was ill 24 hours before the game. He was unbelievably good.
Yeah.
Courtney was amazing.
Yeah.
I thought Joe Marchant had a really good defensive game. I thought Genge's scrummaging, that's the best I've ever seen Genge scrummage.
Yeah.
He was sensational in that regard. I thought some of the work that Jamie George did around the park was brilliant.
Game.
All of those positives are entirely individual work rate and defensive positives. The enormous, enormous negative from England, their attack has just failed to get going all tournament.
Agreed.
And they had, in this game, they had... dominant in the air, they were dominant in the kick chase, although they did concede a couple of 50-22s from Andrew Conway. But they had general dominance in the air, the kick chase was brilliant. They had a totally dominant scrum, which led to Ireland giving away 15 penalties to England's 8. And England did nothing with it except take a few 3 points.
Yeah.
It was so disappointing. If England had been half as clinical as Ireland, England probably would have won by... The reverse scoreline.
Yeah.
The flip side of it, Ireland, they were far more clinical. They got far better offloading game. And they incredibly well absorbed a lot of the pressure that England put on them through both the referee and the kick chase and the scrum. And also when the crowd was getting behind England late on in that first half and through most of the second half, Ireland did incredibly well to calm things down. Absorb, and then when the time was right, strike. It was a very, very good performance from Ireland
I agree with everything you said. I also want to give a little shout out to Sam Simmons. I thought it was great seeing him playing the way we know Sam Simmons can play.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
I liked how he carried. He does show that he brings something different. He's so lively on his feet.
He's so explosive.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I know why Exeter do things the Exeter way and how they build their team. But I think he's worth it. It's a big thing, but I think he is. And I think with Tom Curry and Courtney Laws, you've got the size there to justify it.
Or Tom Curry and Jack Noel.
Exactly.
But England, and that attack piece, I don't think Smith is getting the platform that he needs. And I don't know, I'm not smart enough to understand why, but he's not playing well. And I don't know, I was thinking about this, Randall didn't have a good game, and...
See, he's been talked up as having quite a good game, and I think that's because he had some moments where he did the quick snipey things. But the fundamentals, I'm kind of with you a little bit.
It's the thin slices.
Yeah.
He does some brilliant, because he's such a live wire player. He does some things brilliantly and looks like a live wire. Some of the thin slices, thin slices. Some of it, when you look at the bigger picture of his defensive positioning in the line. Some of his box kicking was awful, and I think some of his ball was actually slow to Marcus Smith. But I don't know if it's that. I don't know if it's the fact that Slade's not really a 12, and certainly he's not a 12 like Esterhazen is a 12. And you've got another combination of different centres working. So I don't know if it's the inside-outside thing, but Marcus Smith isn't playing anywhere near like what he plays for.
He's not.
For Quinns. And
that could
he actually
just be international rugby versus club rugby.
Yeah. It
could be
well.
Danny Kerr.
It could be. Yeah, difference between Danny Kerr and Harry Rundle.
You know, being able to find Don Brandt on those clever little lines. No, I mean, these things take a lot of time, don't they, to get a settled partnership. The other thing as well is, it's kind of an extension to what you said, but where's the focal point for the England attack? You know, Stewart's a great player. Love him. Not really a strike runner, so you don't have anyone coming in from fullback. I do like the wings, but neither of them are, you know, they're sort of very busy, very good all-rounders. Neither of them a focal point of attack. And then you got Marchant, who's awesome, but just
I thought Marchant
not quite together.
Marchant did really, really well in defence. I didn't see him in attack.
Yeah, with the exception of what was it against South Africa? It was Ben Young started, Rafi Quirk off the bench. But that 10-12-13 was what finished the game against South Africa that England won in the autumn.
I'm sold on Slade being a starter. I think I'm sold on him being at 12 too. You just got to stick with him.
Yeah,
if you're going to go with Mark Smith, you got to stick with him. And you got to stick with Slade. I think they're brilliant.
But then there are jobs that need to be fulfilled in a team, like you talked about getting over the gain line. There's certain things like that. They need to be fulfilled in a team.
Do you know who they would kill for? They would kill for a... what's his name? I don't want to say Ollie, because that's who I went to school with. Cuthbert.
Alex Cuthbert,
just someone like that, just an absolute horse,
big strong boy coming in off the wing.
Gail Ficker would be brilliant for
Will Muir's something. Very much in the Alex Cuthbert mould.
Will Muir wouldn't they could do a
not
lot
quite
worse
as big
than
Will Muir
not quite as big, no,
but yeah, you could use him. You could use someone like Ollie Hassel Collins.
Yes, Paolo Adogwu.
Doggers not quite as tall as Cuthbert,
no
but nice wide hips.
But someone who does something else.
Yeah.
You know, get over the game line. They don't seem to get... They all seem to want to pass or dance, and there's not really much in between.
Yeah.
And in some cases, pass and dance, but not go forward.
I was going a bit, like, mad in a good way at 60 minutes. Like, my daughter actually came up to see me. I was... And just what's going on? Is everything all right? Because I was just going, God, come on! I was going spare because I thought, and at 15 all, I was like, this is on. My God, this is going to be one of the great, great wins.
Yeah, and then it kind of ran out of steam.
Yeah.
And understandable because they were working. But this, I guess I'm going back to my point that so many players worked so hard, but England didn't work smart. Because they were working too hard to just keep afloat.
I always think about England. This has been my theory about England for a long time. So they beat the All Blacks. Remember when Tom Youngs throws that amazing pass over to Chris Ashton and dives in? And that was based on exactly the same thing, which we're criticising them for, which is just this incredible physical work.
Did they lose that game?
No, they won that one.
It was like, that was 2018, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the little floated pass, Chris Ashton goes in the corner.
I thought that was the game where Sam Underhill... Did he get a yellow card?
Maybe, but they definitely won it.
Are you sure?
I'm 1,000,000% sure.
JB's not going to... would not forget any time England lost.
Yeah.
That is true.
Great point.
Yeah.
Did they? Maybe that's the point I was going to make, which is they came out organs blazing and then they couldn't maintain it.
Yeah, that's, I think, what happened.
Yeah, maybe they did lose then, because that would have been my theory.
So you are 1,000,000% sure they won,
and
also you're 100% sure they lost.
Yeah, I am pretty confident it's one of these two.
It's definitely...
The odds are 33-1, according to the bookies, when it comes to a rugby draw.
Ashton scored after 1 minute.
That's it?
Yeah.
I'm sure England won.
Do you know who else got the tries? There were two other tries. New Zealand scored one via their starting 15.
Oh, I thought you were going to say via Fifita. Go on.
Oh, no, right. Via their starting 15, who was?
The starting
fullback.
Damien McKenzie
was. D-Mac. And England's starting hooker scored the other try.
Should have been...
Hartley.
James it George. Was Hartley.
Was it Hartley? Yeah. Hartley. Still,
and England lost 15-16.
Maybe that was my point.
That you were 1,000,000% certain that England lost.
Yeah, 1,000,000% they won, but they actually lost.
Yes.
But yeah, I just remember that game because they worked very, 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 very hard, and that was the blueprint.
Well, that was what England was successful at for quite a long period of time, where they scored in the first 4 or 5 minutes in the run-up to the World Cup. Almost every game in that 2 year period in the Rugby World Cup, they'd scored within 5 minutes. They scored a try within 5 minutes. They did the same against New Zealand in the semi final, where they looked absolutely amazing. And then they did they do have this tendency to drop off towards the end of the game.
Yeah, so here is my thing. If you've got the work rate bit right, but you're not getting over the gain line, you're just on... well, you're waiting to lose, effectively, because you're not going to be that effective. Now, there's two ways to look at this. Number one is, you're only a Manu Tuilagi away from winning. The other way to look at this is, if you're only a Manu Tuilagi away from winning, you're miles away from winning.
You're never going to win.
Yeah,
you're never going to win anything really ever again.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Two words I'm going to say, which again, it's not cool, it's not popular, and people like to not say it, but I'm just going to say Owen Farrell. Yesterday's the kind of day I would have loved Owen Farrell.
What would he do?
He would have been playing 12, and he would have been an extra, like,
you don't need any more hands. That's
and
for sure.
And maybe if Marcus Smith isn't having his greatest game, you just go, do you know what, just sit in a 10 and get us in the right part of the pitch.
I do think that Owen Farrell would have managed it equally as well, if not better, than Marcus Smith. I think he'd be in a better position in this type of game with Owen Farrell. I don't think he is the answer to what England are missing at the moment. I don't think putting him at 12 rather than Slade doesn't really make much of a difference to me. Putting him at 10 might make a bit of difference, but I'm just saying
putting him in the team, because you see what Maro Itoje does for the England pack. It's actually, you know, as much as people like to malign him, and Owen Farrell isn't quick, he isn't going to have a searing break, he isn't going to score amazing tries, but he is, like, mentality, core skills, and he's
almost Dan Biggar, isn't he?
He's very
they're very similar.
Very similar to Dan Biggar. Very similar to Dan Biggar. I totally agree with you.
Yeah,
he's a better 12 than Dan Biggar.
He is a better 12 than Dan Biggar, but Dan Biggar's a better 10 than Farrell. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. I think you can never say not having the captain. Sorry, you can never say not having your captain is a good thing. There again, I just don't think it makes much of a difference. They need to go forward. That's what they need.
Yeah, but when you're looking around and you're going, right, how do we kind of solve this one? I think a year and a bit out from a World Cup, and I'm not saying I would always start with this organisation, but people are going, oh, get Ollie Lawrence in. You know, it's like Ollie Lawrence, fine player.
Seb Atkinson, get him in.
Seb Atkinson, Ollie Lawrence. We've got guys. We talked last week. I missed out on Chris Harris and Johnny Williams and Nick Tompkins and stuff. But all of those names that you might want to mention, then you've got a guy with 5 European Cup wins, with 90 England caps, with a World Cup final appearance, with a European Player of the Year accolade.
But not the right qualities, unfortunately.
Well, all I'm calling out is that's bollocks. And this Six Nations, without him, it demonstrates...
What about last Six Nations with him?
Yeah, you make a good point. I'm just putting it out there. I've said my piece.
If only Cocker Singer was really good at rugby, that would be decent. But he's... England just... I think I've said it over and over again. Get over the game line. Just go forward. They need some go forward somewhere. I'm amazed they didn't come from the pack, but I guess they are a man down as well.
I don't know if it necessarily needs to be the get over the game line. That is... You're looking for some...
Sorry, did I say 5 European Cup wins?
I meant five Premiership, three European Cup. Yeah.
If you're turning defences, it becomes very hard to defend all of a sudden. But
you can turn defences in different ways, can't you?
Yes.
You don't just need the route one to create the room out wide. But England are, And I can't put my finger on what it is, but England are not.
Is it? It's, you know, whatever it is that allows Don Brandt to find those miniature spaces. Now, maybe they don't exist in the international rugby, and that's the difference.
Maybe they don't. Maybe. Yeah.
And you have to break down the door, and that's when Don Brandt can start running through gaps.
If Leinster were suddenly jettisoned into the Premiership and Don Brandt could still play like that against a full-on Leinster team, then...
I think he probably could, actually.
Well, you're going to be playing against a full-on Ulster team who beat Leinster this weekend.
Correct, Phil. I was going to mention it, but we're, you know, domestic rugby, but you're quite right.
Yes. Number one. Number one in the URC.
I'm not as disheartened as many are, but I'm disappointed.
My big thing is the attack has just looked totally stale.
Yeah.
And maybe the... Because Eddie was talking a lot in the week about cohesion, and he was referring to the cohesion of the island team, which is a real thing because they've got years of playing together as an island team. They also, a lot of the partnerships play together in domestic rugby as well, and that is real and legitimate within that island team. It is far less so in the England team. Changing the England team frequently gives you less cohesion, so that's not necessarily a good thing.
Training the coaches. But,
well, this is exactly the point I was going to make, and the attack is the thing that's been struggling most recently. So let's talk about the attack. Martin Gleeson, I'm sure he's a fine coach.
Yep.
But he's come in for, what was it, the last 4 months or something like that. He wasn't even the first appointment in that role. And his highest level of playing rugby union is...
Oral.
Was it Oral or Preston Grasshoppers?
Oh, no, hang on.
Did he play at Preston?
No, Sean Long played at Preston.
Did he not play with him at Preston?
He might have, but they both played for Oral against Tok H a few years ago.
There you go.
And we beat them, just saying. So I guess that means Gleeson and Long nil, JB one. In the coaching stakes.
So you should be coaching England's attack.
I could do that.
Yeah.
What would be the first thing you do?
The drill. Truck and trailer drill.
I'd get them all in and say, who's got any ideas? And the first idea, the first player that came up with an idea, I think, we're doing that. I agree.
I'm like, no, I'm the boss. Yeah, it goes in the bin. You're doing laps.
Yeah, laps and laps and laps.
Anyone else got any good ideas? No.
Perfect, let's start.
Just on some emails that have come in, contact deadchasers@gmail.com. Glenn Aston from Chelmsford. He made several points, but I'm just going to pick up on one. He said, England were playing really well when Jones took off Randall for Youngs. Why? Well, I think we kind of covered that. It wasn't Randall's greatest game, but I understand the positives he has.
Yeah. Let's just remind ourselves why this happens all the time. It's in front row. It's a bloody hard position. Like, if you look at the amount of distance scrum halves run, that's why you need two of them. I think they would cover more ground than any other position on average.
They will do.
Yeah, and at high speed, and they've got to do their snipes. And I tell you what, it's really hard, and you don't think about this. Passing a ball is bloody hard. A little side story here. I was watching Raffy Quirk,
Broughton Park's Raffy Quirk,
and this is like 2 or 3 years ago, with his coach at Carrington, passing a ball. And this sounds really, really basic, but he's doing 5 passes from the deck to his coach's hand, and his coach must be standing about 10, 15 yards away. But these passes were as hard as he physically could do it, and it looked absolutely exhausting. It was a good, 15 minutes of this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Bang.
Set him down, another hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It looked absolutely exhausting. And that's what they've got to do all the time. So it doesn't necessarily need to be a tactical change for the scrum off to come on. It's just the sheer amount of work rate he's got to do.
And if you want quick ball, which most people do most of the time, most teams do most of the time, you've got to be there and on it.
Digging, passing, digging. Yeah. It's horrible.
Shouting, digging,
shouting
passing.
As well.
He also highlighted Genge for Marla and March for Davy. I think the same things apply. And I guess the point here would be that you need 23 world-class players to win, or 23 high-quality players to win a World Cup, and that's got to be the...
To win a World Cup, you need 30 or 31. High quality players.
Correct.
Yeah.
This one from Hugh Black. He says, to what extent does the international calibre of player work in favour of players either getting carded or not getting carded? The reason for this was watching Furlong against England. Multiple infringements, but no card. I suppose on the penalties alone, on the scrums alone, had that been a wet behind the ears guy, I would have seen like repeated penalties. Like, seriously, you've got to sort this out, or you're gone. Mm. And he says, "Are there any other players like this who get the rub of the green because of how world class they are?"
Richie McCaw
being the obvious one. He says that is a thing. I think you can't help but.
Oh, Alan Wynn.
Yeah, 100%.
I think Maro often gets it as well.
Yeah, well, Maro does some horribly illegal things.
Yeah. Was it Autumn or Six Nations last year where he got pinged? I think it was Six Nations last year because he wasn't playing at the highest level, as in he was playing in the Championship.
Yeah.
And everyone attributed it to the fact that he's not playing in the Premiership.
Being able to manipulate referees as and when.
Yeah. But Maro gets away with so much because he is so bloody good.
The thing is, if you're a ref and you're thinking, like, post-match beers with the boys, because they all like to mix, you don't want to be on Mario's bad side, do you? I bet he gets all the best parties. And if you're hanging around with Mario post-Twickenham...
All the Ralph Lauren parties.
Exactly. I mean, not that refs are not famous or well-known, some of them are, but a lot of them are fairly innocuous if you saw them on the street. They're not getting into VIP. But if you're with Mario...
If you're with Mario, maybe.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Maybe. Yeah.
There are people watching Six Nations from all around the world. Gavin Hegarty sent us a little picture of his hotel room in Vegas.
Oh, awesome.
Where he was poolside. The Venetian in Vegas. Very hungover, but catching up on the pod and watched Wales v France in the sports pit in the MGM earlier.
Nice.
And watched England Ireland at 8:45 a.m. Oh, I want to do... You boys are in Lisbon next week.
Oh, yeah. You could have come.
Are you going to watch any rugby? Yeah, but
of course
the Portugal game got cancelled. But
Yeah,
go on.
I'm freelance. I don't get a holiday pay from work.
Same. Beardmore & Co. Independent financial advisors. Where do you think the name comes from? We're not a multinational yet.
Fair enough.
So you'd be working from Lisbon on the Friday?
Absolutely.
Making you a multinational.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
continental, at least.
Yeah.
Great point.
Anything else to talk about on this game, or shall we just touch on the last game of the weekend?
Yeah, touch on
the
last game. I'm going to confess, I didn't watch it.
Nope.
So I did watch it.
No, well done.
Oh, good. Thank you, Phil. I knew Phil would. That's part of the reason why I didn't.
Yeah,
Phil will have this. Don't bother. And I apologise, Scotland fans, but it was actually the same when England played Italy.
Yeah, and Wales.
And when Wales played Italy.
Next week.
Scotland were the better team and always looked like they were going to win. However, there was a moment where half-time Italy go in... Scotland go in 19-10 up. I think their second or third try was Italy were attacking on Scotland's line and they throw an intercept, and Ali Price didn't quite have the wheels to get there, but I think it was Chris Harris who scores two phases later. That was one team is scoring that try. It's either Italy or, as it happens, Scotland. That's a 14-point swing. Italy legitimately could have gone up at half-time, in which case this game would have been far, far more interesting.
Yeah.
As it happens, they didn't. Scotland then performed much better early on in the second
Big
half.
Big 14-point swing, wasn't there? That was
close. And the young rugby pixie, I'll say his name wrong, but Capuoso.
Okay.
Who can only be about 9.5 stone.
Oh, yes. I know this boy.
Yeah. He... took his tries absolutely brilliantly. He looked electric. He was like the...
71 kilograms, apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently. I mean, that's...
Is that official... Is that official scales or official JB?
Well, I'm off to weigh him soon.
You could snatch him.
I'm not sure you should. He looks too young for you to be manhandling him, JB. There might be some kind of restraining order going.
He's 22.
He's listed on Wikipedia as 68 kilos. He's like a jockey.
I bet he'd have good enough conditioning that he could hold himself in a rigid bar-like position for you to actually snatch him. Overhead snatch.
That'd be amazing.
He is the second coming of Matteo Menotti.
Mm.
He's like the same guy. He took his two tries brilliantly to make it. So the scoreline looked better for Italy than it was. However, if that intercept had not gone to Ali Price and gone to Italian hands and Italy score there, it would have been a much, much more interesting game.
I feel bad for not watching this live and watching it back and fast-forwarding through loads of it. I do feel bad for that, and I don't want to keep going on about Italy. I'm not saying, oh, get them out. That's not what I'm saying. But no one wants them to be really good. The games where Sergio Parise led his Italian team to beat France, some of the great Six Nations games watching that. And I'm willing it to happen. It's just, I think it's a long, it's a long, long road ahead.
Who was the Italian 10 who we never heard of again? Polynesian fella.
Kelly Haimoina.
That's the one. So I just saw that they had Aitoa Halafia. They're playing eight.
Yeah.
Just trying to remember what.
Halafia.
Yeah, that's the one.
He's a good player. I mean, they've got some good players. Their two wingers are awesome.
Yeah, they're great.
So Monty.
He is very good, isn't he?
He's very good, and he works bloody hard. He gets off his wing.
That guy is in.
He's in tremendous shape. But the other winger, Bruno, who plays in France, he's electric. His offload for the Calambrelli try was exceptional, and he works. They're two legitimately excellent wingers. They've got good players across the board.
Paolo Odogwu would do a job there.
Doggers would be useful.
Yeah, and Caden Murley, if Lionel doesn't want it. Caden Murley. Yeah.
I'm not sure he's qualified, but Lionel will do. You just feel a bit. I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic with Italy, but I have been for a little while. But that is based on. So Italy beat Scotland. They're under-20s this weekend. So they beat England and Scotland this tournament. They've now beaten Scotland four out of the last five. In the under-20s.
I've got a feeling there's a mixture, isn't there, of like maybe under-20s isn't always what it's cracked up to be. It doesn't always translate into a great senior squad. And also, what happens to these guys when they're good enough? They go to Ziba and Benetton. Oh, Benetton's had some success.
Benetton, current Rainbow Cup champions. Forever.
Yeah, pretty much.
They will be
everlasting holders.
Infinite Rainbow Cup champions.
And then Ziba. I mean, it's like qualifying going to a Welsh region, like nothing good is going to happen. Qualifying going to the Dragons, oh, can I talk about the Dragons later?
Yeah, save it for the end of the MWDP. Yeah.
Of course, where would we be? Have you spoken enough about this game?
Yeah.
One thing, actually.
Oh, no. One thing I do want to mention is Italians, and this is giving me heart and hope that I will not be so apathetic about watching Italy in the Six Nations in years ahead. Their under-20s have been great.
Yeah, yep. That is the point I just made. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, sorry. I was looking at my phone. I'm so sorry, Phil.
What are we looking up? Because you would
even having a conversation about Italy, I just zoned out then completely. I'm so sorry. Oh, that's really rude.
No, they have been legitimately good. And
I can't believe
it's been a long weekend. You've had all those IKEA wardrobes to put together.
Oh, mate, honestly.
So,
Kieran Crowley's a good coach as well.
Yeah.
So, and we had all those pull-ups, chest to bars and stuff today, didn't we?
We're not talking about them. People got complaining.
I hate thrusters.
Oh, yeah, someone has asked a question, though.
I hate thrusters.
I don't mind them. Someone has asked us a question about CrossFit on the emails.
Really?
And the answer is, probably the best person at CrossFit is the only guy who doesn't do CrossFit the room, which is Phil.
Well, he proved that by doing. So there's a thing called the Open at the moment where it's something that you get ranked along with everyone that does it in the whole world. It happens once a year, and it's a chance to test yourself. And Phil took an interest in the second one we did, which me and JB were just talking about how our hamstrings and lower backs were in bits, and that we thought we both did all right.
Yep.
Phil, you know, just on his own, without people cheering him on, and...
I didn't work out though, that now.
Stood there. No, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it on my own. Phil went and did it on his own in a hotel gym and beasted the pair of us. Mm. So, yeah.
Unfortunate. Very unfortunate, actually.
I just found the email from Owen Alcock, and he said, I stumbled on this video of 2016 showing Phil deadlift, I think 220, which must have been well over two times body weight. It was actually 230 on that one, which was just shy of three times body weight.
Very
nearly three times body weight.
Wow.
That
result you got the other day on that session, because deadlift was part of it, is not so impressive. I was lifting like more than 50% of my max. So well over 50% of my max.
My max at the moment is a lot less than that. Wow. I don't know what my max is. I did 200 hungover just before Christmas, and I didn't want to. I wouldn't have liked in that state to do.
It's an easy. It's also a very easy lift to injure yourself. I always get injured doing deadlift.
I saw someone in the gym the other day, and he put on. He had 190 on a back squat rack. Right, so he had 190 kgs there. He wasn't a massive guy. And I saw him put the one. I saw him with 190 on. I saw him like psyching himself up and going over to the bar. And I thought, I'm gonna watch this. Cause I know exactly what's gonna happen. He's gonna do like 3 inches.
Yeah,
he's gonna
yeah.
drop 3 inches and stand back up again. And then he did a full ass to grass
190
squat. 190.
Nice.
Not a big guy. It was
that is impressive.
It was awesome. I walked past him and said,
"Nice, bro.
Nice.
Yes, bro.
Nice warm up,
bro.
When you finish your warm up, wait. Let me have a go.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
International Women's Day. What would we do without International Women's Day? How inspiring, by the way. I was so inspired by all the International Women's Day tweets, but no more so than the All Blacks. Do you know who they decided to put on their International Women's Day tweet?
I do because I've had a very brief glimpse at a few tweets about it, but I know very little, to be honest.
One of them's legit and the other one's a bit silly, isn't it? So they used Sevi Reese, and I don't know why you would choose Sevi Reese, but it is possible that he could change.
He's a reformed character. Yeah, I would assume.
Also that I mean, okay, so sorry, before you go into this, if you, I only know this because of the second hand I heard on WhatsApp groups and stuff about this has caused the controversy. Blissfully unaware of any of this because I'm not on Twitter.
Yeah.
And therefore most people were blissfully unaware. Nevertheless, people love to find something to be outraged about on Twitter. And they gave him an opportunity. So on International Women's Day. Now, the nuance
we
here...
We listened, is what he said.
The nuance here, right? Yeah. So the All Blacks Twitter account posted a picture saying, basically, our players wouldn't be anything without their...
By the way, can I just say, completely untrue. Completely and utterly untrue. I believe a lot of those players would still be world-class players if they hadn't got married. Or if, you know...
Well, it mentioned mothers and stuff as well, so...
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, the fact that I play rugby every week in different positions has got anything to do with my mum, frankly.
If anything, if you were bred in a North Whalian test tube,
yeah,
specifically designed to be the perfect rugby athlete, like... I don't know, Ty Furlong,
yeah,
or someone else, Lau Mappi.
Yeah,
you would you'd be even better.
Yeah, look, yeah, absolutely right. Or Ostrakov, other members or not.
But my natural parents held me back. I could have been, exactly. I could have been engineered.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, that was one a bit silly. The other one,
no, but what I want to say, because there is nuance here. So the All Blacks posted something saying, "International." But effectively, I'm paraphrasing. It's International Women's Day. And our players wouldn't be anywhere without their mothers, daughters, wives, and every other female that supports them. People kicked off at that because
by the way, many females that don't support them and do not want them to play on Saturdays. I'll just say that because that is one of our biggest problems at Talk H, are girlfriends and wives not wanting them to play. So it's not always one-way traffic.
See, there's a bit of nuance. Another bit of nuance here is that that there were two things people were upset about: the Sevi Reese one, which. I can understand.
Yeah. Come on. Let's get to it. The second one
is that this... Why are you focusing on the men? Well, it's International Women's Day.
Oh, no, you missed it, mate.
No, because the bit of nuance here is what people didn't realise, and still I think most people don't realise, is that is the at All Blacks Twitter account, which is the Twitter account for the New Zealand men's team.
Yeah, it is.
They had the Black Ferns account. They have an account for all of their different teams, and they put different content out on each of the channels from that team. So, so stop being so offended by everything. Sevi Reese thing, fair enough.
But the other offensive character on there was...
Aaron Smith.
Now, who loves women more than Aaron Smith? I can't think of anyone who would be
another
celebrating...
Another much-needed bit of nuance, Jamie.
Yeah. I can't think of anyone who would be celebrating more heavily International Women's Day than Aaron Smith.
Some people, when they're travelling internationally, just think about things like, I just need to have a shower to freshen up, or maybe I'll grab some food. Aaron Smith thinks... Women.
All the time. So I don't know what they're whinging about.
And anywhere. What, here in a toilet? Yes.
Anywhere.
I mean, Yeah.
So yeah, I don't get what the first one on second one was. But
stop being offended by everything.
Well, it's my yearly cue, and I'm big into International Women's Day. I'm not like you, Tim. I'm big into it. It's my yearly time to post my picture of Margaret Thatcher. So absolutely fine with it.
Well,
very good.
What the same people that were especially offended, and the Severus thing, I understand. The same people that were incredibly
that's
offended.
Right, to be fair,
yeah.
It's a ridiculous idea.
That is a ridiculous
what were they thinking?
Idea. That is a ridiculous idea.
Pretty crazy.
The same people really offended are also the same people that won't answer the question, "What's a woman?"
Yep, it's very true. It's very true.
Mm. Right. Fixtures next week. So we got Wales hosting Italy. This is Super Saturday.
So we won't watch the first one, or will we?
We'll see. We'll see so how Friday night goes.
Yeah. I'll watch that for you, lads.
Thanks.
You have a good
time.
Yeah,
that's a good point, Tim.
We don't even know where we're watching, but we'll find somewhere.
We'll find a rooftop bar.
At altitude.
Yes.
It will not be at sea level.
Yeah,
that's all you can say for certain.
That's 100% true. 100% true. We will
watch.
Have
we got anything else planned?
No, I've got a map of places I want to go, but whether I'm thinking we should go for a run in the morning to see the city.
It's a nice way to see a city.
But it's very hilly. That's the only problem, and I'm not a great runner.
Well, let's start high up.
It's got seven.
Run down.
It's got seven different hills.
Is that like Sheffield? Sheffield's got
loads
of hills.
Apparently, they're very similar.
Yeah, I imagine.
Speaking to someone the other day, and they said Porto, Lisbon's just like Sheffield 15 years ago. It's not quite that developed yet. So maybe that's our challenge: run up all seven hills.
Ooh, I'm not sure about that. If I go for a jog on Saturday, which I'd quite like to, I'd go for a very, very leisurely, slow-paced jog.
And some breakfast. Perfect.
Yes. Yeah.
Just on this, someone else contacted us to let us know that it's the African Rugby Championship qualification is being held in South France, Marseille and Aix-en-Provence.
Now,
Marseille, we can swerve.
Yeah, we can.
Maybe have the odd night out there and go and see some of those giant rats. I'm not sure. But Aix-en-Provence is amazing, as I've testified many times on the pod.
When is this?
I'm just trying to look it up now.
It's in the summer, I think.
I'm very interested in that.
And you can get very cheap flights to Aix.
Ooh, yeah, so here we go.
I don't know why the African will, Championship is
yeah,
in
Yeah, confirm that. Marseille and Aix-en-Provence. So it is, it's across 10 days from the 1st to the 10th of July, and it is a knockout tournament.
Is it?
That sounds cool.
So,
do you fancy a bit of that?
Yes.
Namibia play Burkina Faso.
Okay.
Zimbabwe play the Ivory Coast. Senegal play Algeria. And Uganda play Kenya in the first round of qualifications.
So no Mauritius, no?
Nope.
Interesting.
Not in this.
Oh, sorry, Madagascar.
No, Madagascar.
Madagascar's one I'm thinking
of. Yeah. Yeah, some of the videos of Madagascar playing at home look awesome.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind expensing that as a work trip.
Now, they've already had some pool games to lead to some Madagascar. Ah, here we go. So Madagascar in the same pool as Namibia and Ivory Coast. Now, they all played each other once. Madagascar won one. So they all won one. Ivory Coast won one. So Ivory Coast beat Namibia. Namibia beat Madagascar. And then Madagascar beat Ivory Coast. On points difference, Madagascar missed out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's one to watch out for the summer. Possibly a little trip to the south of France.
Yeah.
Watch a bit of knockout African rugby.
100% in.
As long as we don't have to go anywhere near Marseille.
We'll just watch the games at Aix-en-Provence and, Marseille.
I imagine Marseille is nicer in the summer than it was midwinter when we went.
And the rats were all out. Massive.
Yeah.
It must be nice.
It must be nicer.
There must be nice parts that we just haven't seen.
Doubt yeah. it. Yeah, very much doubt it.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to find out, but there must be.
let me know if you find something.
Yeah, sorry, fixtures.
Okay.
So
fixtures.
I'll take care of the first game, so you boys can.
Perfect.
You can be at altitude.
Okay, so it's going to be Wales win,
Ireland win,
and France win. There you go.
Yes. Now my hope for the England game, because I want England to win. My hope is that actually their kicking duel, where they generally got the better of Ireland, is that's one area where France, I don't think, have been as strong And I think Wales got on top of France this weekend. So that's, it's got to be an area to target them. I think the scrum might be, even though Ireland is a very good scrummaging unit, the French scrummaging unit is even bigger, much bigger. So not sure England are going to get the same change out of them. So if they try and attack the scrum in the same way they did Ireland, I think that could lead to penalties against England rather than for them. So they've got to curb that a little bit. But I still think France are going to win. I think France will win by 8 points.
I think France by... I think it could be more than that. I think it could be France by 11. France by 11.
So France are going to win their first tournament since... Do you know what year they last won it?
I'm going to say 2013.
2020.
Earlier?
Oh, no.
2009.
2010.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, first win since 2010.
I've got,
let alone a Grand Slam. Their last Grand Slam. Or did they win it with a Grand Slam then?
They did win with a Grand Slam then.
Wow. They're all or nothing then. They're all in. Or they're a shambles.
Yeah. And they have had, in 2013, which you mentioned initially, Tim, that's their only wooden spoon.
Who was their coach?
I said 2015, actually. JB said
2013. Sorry, you said 2013, Jimmy.
Who was their coach?
In 2010.
Not Bernard Lepore, surely.
Well, Levermont was the coach the following year for the World Cup, so I assume it was Levermont.
That was a beautiful shambles, that, wasn't it?
That was the player revolt, and Aaron Aldicke, amongst others, took charge.
Glorious.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's say Mark Levermont.
Yeah, blame it on him. I wonder what he's doing with himself now.
Who knows?
Just looking awesome. Probably is part of it. I don't know what he's actually doing, the rest of it, but he's walking around looking amazing.
Question, JB, you like some bold style statements.
Oh, yeah.
If you needed to, would you ever wear Fabien Gaultier's glasses?
Bold style statements? I thought you meant like, verbally.
You do that as well.
Yeah. No, I would not wear those glasses is the answer. But there again, I don't wear glasses, so I'm not...
Yeah, if you needed glasses. I mean, you can always get them with clear lenses.
Yeah. Now, does he have them for a reason? Has he got glaucoma or something?
I don't think it's like an Edgar Davin situation. I think it is just... I could be totally wrong, and apologies, Fabien, if I'm getting...
All right, let's piece an outfit together. Would you wear Yannick Nianga's scarf that he wore?
Yes, I remember that.
He's a very cool man.
Yeah, he
Nianga's
is cool.
Scarf, Nianga, I'd take.
I'd definitely wear that.
Yep.
Would you have... This was a question on a WhatsApp group the other day. Would you have to have... You get all of his money... But for the rest of your life, you have to have his hair, no hats, no covering it up, no burning it off. Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes.
His hair is an absolute disgrace.
You'd want it to fall out, wouldn't you?
I'd be like spraying hairspray while charring my creme brulee all over the place. You're smoking in the petrol station with that head of hair.
Excellent.
Yeah. It is a disgrace.
I would take the money off.
I would also take the money.
I would take
it's
the money.
It's an absolute
for that.
Disgrace.
It is. It's. I think it might be that because he and a lot of rich wealthy people do this. They will have one type of t-shirt.
Yeah, which is Zuckerberg does.
So there's one less decision to make every day.
Yeah, that's an Einstein thing, isn't
that's
it?
That's an Einstein thing, and I think maybe that's just it. If I just maybe
there are some things.
There is a point in your life though where you get stuck with the same hair. It's like you get to an age, and then that's the hair you have forevermore.
Lockdown was good for that.
It did make
because it made people
it
grow their hair.
Yeah.
I had a few interesting looks during lockdown.
The mullet was
the mullet with the moustache at the same time.
Yeah, brilliant.
I had that for about 2 weeks.
But that's why you get, and quite a lot of them in Wales, actually, that's why you get men of a certain age in their like 60s and 70s now with that old school teddy boy haircut.
Mm.
And it's because when they were like 27, it was like
that's
the hair they had, and that's the hair they have forevermore. Mark Zuckerberg's is
Look at that.
Disgrace,
it's an absolute disgrace. How much money does he have? Who's doing that to him?
So there are some things which I think very rich people do. Like, but they maybe some rich people do it, but then lots of other not quite so rich people copy them because that's what they think rich people should do. More to the point, successful people do. So like the one type of t-shirt, for instance, and that's one thing. The other thing which I've heard quite a lot of is most successful people read 50 books a year. I don't believe them. I think that you can even come close.
I don't think you can read 50. So I read 13 books last year, and I kind of challenged myself to read one a month.
Yeah.
And it's, I read some brilliant books, but it's also hard going sometimes.
Yeah, I'm just looking at my audiobooks. I've got 27 done so far. Most of which I don't finish.
Well, there's a difference.
How many do you consume whilst you're asleep?
Oh yeah, when they run out. Damn it!
Reading is more time consuming than audiobooks as well, because you can't read while you're driving.
No, you can't. I've tried. It's difficult.
Please do not read while you're driving.
Do you want to know which books I've just started?
Go on.
You know this.
Yeah.
But I'll tell Tim. I've started the Flashman books.
Have you now?
They are brilliant. Yeah, they're absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And I was saying to Phil earlier on, all the characters, you think that they're made up because you don't know really what's going on. And then you realise all the characters are real people, except for Flashman.
Mm.
So he talks about the Duke of Wellington, he talks about all these generals and whatnot. And you actually end up learning quite a lot about history. I'd had no idea about the 44th in Afghanistan, but it's bloody brilliant.
Mm.
It's jarring, though. Some of the racist language is incredibly jarring, because we just... I can see why they might not be around for much longer, but it's one hell of a book. No, one hell of a series.
Interesting.
Mm.
Boris Johnson is 100% Flashman.
100%. A coward who fails upwards.
A coward who fails upwards. When the history books are written about him, he'll have solved COVID, got us out of the EU, and, you know, beaten the Russians, and it'll all be by accidents.
And a few other things as well.
And a few other things, and he is literally Flashman.
By the way, just on the Mark Zuckerberg thing, I've got an answer to your question. Who is doing that to him? It's his wife.
That makes sense.
There's a picture which is on the Know Your Meme website, so it's clearly a lot of, you're not alone in not being bewildered looking at Mark Zuckerberg's hair, but his wife cuts it at home.
My wife was desperate to cut my hair during lockdown.
You're too handsome, Phil. That's what it is.
There's no way.
You want to clip your wings.
No way I was trusting her with that.
Right.
Finish off.
But a big game to watch out for Spain going to Georgia in the decisive game in the Rugby Europe Championship.
And if you're in Lisbon, drop JB and I a note on Twitter or contact eggchasers@gmail.com.
Yeah, and thanks to all the emails. Sorry if I didn't get to yours. We do read them and we really appreciate them, as we do your support by hitting subscribe, by leaving a 5-star review, or by going to patreon.com/eggchasers. Let the boys play.
Let's play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.